Welcome to Smart Finance 360, the podcast where money matters, meet innovative thinking. Every week, we dive deep into the world of finance, exploring trends, debunking myths, and bringing you the latest insights from industry experts. Whether you're a seasoned investor, a financial newbie, or somewhere in between, this is your go-to source for becoming financially savvy. Welcome to another episode of Smart Finance 360, Your Mortgage and More. And today is mortgage-related, specifically refinancing. Now, Jerome Powell, they said that they cut rates a couple weeks ago from this when we're filming this. And although they didn't necessarily affect rates, we'll see if they're going to affect rates. We'll talk about that here in this episode because they're expecting two rate cuts. But people say it takes, 100 hours to become an expert in mortgages. I would say my guest here, Jeff Lake, and myself probably have a combined, 3.5 million hours?
At least.
You know, you got three and I got 500,000, so we'll take that.
I've been doing this since October of 2001.
Wow. Yeah, so you've done a while. I say mortgage years are like dog years, so you've been doing it for 50 years.
Yeah, it feels like I've been doing it for 50 years.
So let's talk refinancing. So first and foremost, for people, you know, that in the last few years, obviously refinancing has gone through cycles. 2020, 2021 was like the massive refinancing era for the entire world, right?
Yeah, that was rates perfect
historically. But right now, we're kind of in a little sweet spot where people that have rates in the high sevens, some are in the eights, some are in the high sixes, it's penciling to refinance. So kind of tell people, what are the options to refinance? What is a refinance? So if they're watching this on YouTube or wherever we have this, you know, shown. But let's just go into refinancing 101, then I'll work our way at. You're going to learn everything about refinancing in this episode, by the way. So let's start with the 101.
So refinance, if you want to look at it as a definition, is taking what you currently owe, changing your rate, and maybe adjusting your term to make that better for you in the long haul on your day-to-day cash flow.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say you've got a rate 6.875. Rule of thumb is, depending on how much the cost is, if you can move down 0.75 point or better, it's time to look into if it makes sense for you. Mm-hmm. So as a person who's out there looking at the internet, it's super important to understand what cost goes with the rate that's being advertised. That's something that a lot of the people that are online, or what I like to affectionately call headset jockeys, they don't want to talk about that. They just want to talk about the rate, because what is sexy to people is being able, I like to call it the cocktail party brag. It's like, oh man, I just got 4.875. Everybody's impressed by that. What they don't know is, what did that 4.875 do to your equity? And how did you get to that 4.875? So there's a couple different kinds of refinance. If we're talking, let's talk about this as a conventional loan, because there's many different loan types and refinances affect things much differently. So on a conventional loan, you can refinance just to a rate and term. So you go back to a 30-year and you change your rate. One of the things that we have here being a broker is we have some things called custom terms. So let's say you bought in 2023. So now you're 2 years into your mortgage and you don't want to lose that equity you've bought down by making payments, because part of what happens when you make a payment isn't just paying your interest, you're paying down a little bit of your principal. So you're gaining back some of that principal that you've already paid. So we can do a term that would match where you're at, a 28-year term with a new rate. So that way you're not actually losing any of that principal you've already paid. So that's important, but that's on rate and term. A lot of people where they're at right now is they had a rough go of it in the last couple of years, and they've had to use some of their revolving credit just to supplement where they're at and make their lives work. If you have enough equity, you can do a cash out refinance, pay off that heavy 26 to 31% debt, and get it back into maybe even a 6.25, 6.5. And what we're going to want to do when we look at that is, what is your blended rate? And how does that affect your month-over-month cash flow? Those two things are very important if you're going to look at how to use mortgage to build wealth.
Yeah, that's great. So explain a little bit what the blended rate is. What is that with, you know?
So what you're going to want to do is you're going to want to take your total amount owed. So let's say you have, let's make it extreme, $60,000 in credit card debt that's at a 26% rate. And then you're going to take your $350,000 mortgage. You combine those two owings together. And then you take the balance of where that rate lies. So you weight it to how much is on the mortgage, how much is on the revolving debt, And that's your true interest rate you're paying. Well, when you look at that 26%, a lot of times, even if you've got a rate in the fours, you're going to be at 9 or 10% on a blended rate of what you're paying. So it's important to understand what your total interest spend is. One of the things I think that we do in America is this. Well, I've got these assets and I've got these liabilities. Oh, and I've got a mortgage and a house. Mm-hmm. That's a bad way to think about it because your mortgage is a liability and your house is definitely an asset.
Yep.
So you need to look at those things all in one spot and quit taking that and slicing out the mortgage and the home as a separate thing because they're not. So we want to make sure we're looking at all of our assets and all of our debts in the same light.
Yeah, I love that you said about the blended rate. A lot of people don't understand. They just don't get it. They don't understand that, like, hey, look, like the overall picture is something that a good loan officer is going to look at compared to a, you know, someone who just takes orders. Yep. So I like that you're looking at the overall structure and the health of, okay, well, yeah, you may be going from, you know, sometimes their rate goes a little higher on the refinance on their mortgage,
sure,
but then going from a 26% rate on $100,000 in credit card debt to nothing, your blended rate's going to go way down in that situation. So that's awesome.
And here's the other piece. If it's true that you could actually afford that debt service, what I mean by that is if you weren't struggling to make the credit card payments and the mortgage payment, and we can take and lower down what your total spend is and what your total rate is, if you can take the amount you were paying, pay that entirety against the mortgage, the speed that you're going to pay that mortgage down is going to accelerate tremendously. So that means that as you pay down additional principal, your net effective mortgage rate goes down every time you pay additional principal that isn't currently due. So let's say we get you in a 6.25% rate, but we can knock 10 or 11 years off of that. You have to take the difference in that interest rate savings. There's a calculation you can do to see exactly what that mortgage rate really is. So in all reality, you're probably still paying that 4% rate you were in.
Interesting.
But you're just knocking down how much interest you're paying in total.
Yeah, that's cool.
So you need somebody who understands those things and can actually layman's term them to you, put them on paper so you can see how that all works.
Yep.
Because the key is a lot of people will go, you've seen this, I'm sure, let's get all our consumer debt and our revolving debt paid. We'll go to a new mortgage. We'll get our payment down. Oh, hey, now we can afford that trip we wanted to do and put it back on that credit card. It's our job to educate people that we don't want to do that because we're just doing something that's going to be cyclical. And you'll have a lot of people that say refinancing is bad because of that cycle. That's where we need to be an advisor, not just a mortgage guy. So we want to give those people the advice and show them the plan. And then post-closing, we want to take care of helping them manage that plan by checking in with them every 90 to 180 days. To say, hey, how's it going with the plan? Have you kept those credit cards not used? Are you making those additional payments? How are we doing recapturing that principal balance and actually making you wealthy?
Yeah, so I mean, there's a lot of different types of refinances as well. And once you get in the nitty gritty, I love that you review everything with them. So if you're listening to this, you know, the different types of refinances is maybe you have an FHA loan. And what happens with that FHA loan is you're going to have private mortgage insurance forever. Forever.
Yep.
So if you don't refinance out of it, you make your last payment to your mortgage 30 years from now, you're still going to be paying for PMI. So private mortgage insurance protects the lender just in case that you default. So, but what's cool about this is you can refinance into a conventional loan, do a rate and term. Maybe you get the same rate, maybe you get a little bit higher rate because FHA mortgage rates are historically a lot lower, but they have PMI attached to them. So that's number one. You can do a rate and term to get rid of PMI. You could also do a refinance to get rid of PMI from conventional to conventional. So that's cool. Jeff, you talked about the cash out. You can cash out conventional. You can do a cash out FHA as well. They just have different things. Again, PMI and then 20% equity is needed. They're going to tap out there. Another refinance we'll talk about that we see a lot is going to be the rate and term divorce refinance.
Absolutely.
Tell a little bit about the difference between a divorce refinance, how much higher we can go up in equity, and how it's treated compared to just a regular traditional conventional.
So if you are dissolving your marriage, and there's equity owed to the person who is leaving the home, we can treat that as a rate and term refinance, get rate and term refinance rates, and go to, on conventional, 97% loan to value.
Amazing.
And on FHA, most people don't know this, but you can also go to 97.9% because you have your your upfront mortgage insurance you can include in that.
And 99.9% of loan officers do not know this.
They do not.
A little, what do they call it? A little, what's the egg?
It's a nugget. It's a
nugget. There it is.
It's an Easter egg.
Easter egg. That's what it is. It's a good little Easter egg for people that are watching, but it's something that like that right there is treated like a rate in terms. So you actually get better rates than you would for a cash out.
100%. Here's the other thing. If you're going to be dissolving a marriage and you're talking to an attorney, please, please, please bring a mortgage loan officer into that conversation. Because what I see a lot is somebody agrees that they're going to refinance to get the other party off within a certain amount of time in the divorce decree. That is a legal and binding contract. So you need to know if that is actually available to you or what it's going to take to make it available to you within that time frame.
Yep.
Otherwise, you'll be in contempt of court. And there's things that can happen to you that are not fun.
Yeah, there's a lot of things. You really want to make sure you get ahead of the curve. But the fact that you can do that, that is a very cheap way to pay off someone else when you're divorced, getting divorced.
The key there is you can only pay out the equity. You cannot pay off any other debts with that. So there's not an ability to get cash back for the other party or to pay off debts for the party who's being made whole. They have to pay off those debts through that equity position. So they can't go, oh, I want my equity and I want $10,000 to pay off the car. That doesn't work. They can get their equity and then use part of that equity to pay off the car. They can't double dip.
Yeah. No double dipping there. So that's a really cool like Easter egg. That's what it was.
That's right.
We also got our government refinances as well. You can go from an FHA to an FHA, VA to VA. Explain that where it's the interest rate reduction refinance loans.
So they're a little different. FHA is called a streamline.
Yep.
A VA is called an IRL, interest rate reduction refinance loan. So let's go on FHA. The big difference between IRL and streamline is on an IRL, we don't need an appraisal and we can actually roll in any costs. So on an FHA, we don't need an appraisal, but there's a formulaic way we can figure out the maximum loan amount available, and it's based on what your first loan was. Normally, what I see is you're going to be making anywhere from a full payment to a payment and a half at closing
for FHA.
For FHA to pay those costs.
Yep.
So it's important to understand that. If you can't get there or you don't have that, then FHA rate and term is still a great option, but you do need an appraisal. Now, on both Streamline and IRL, there is no appraisal, no income, no assets needed except for what is coming to the table. So there's no reserves.
Yep.
So,
which is great.
It is awesome. We can usually do an IRL. I've seen them happen in as little as 8 days.
They can go pretty quick.
Pretty quick. On streamlines, they're not as fast because there's a lot of back and forth on that maximum loan amount. And we also do have to have those assets that we can look at for paying that payment to payment and a half at closing.
Yeah.
So there's a little more legwork to get done on an FHA streamline. But both of those loans are great loans to help just reduce your rate and not do a full refinance.
Yeah, they're great options. They really are. I love both of those programs because they really do help an individual and they're very specific to that type of client. Okay, so we kind of went the 101, what they are, what the types of refinances there are. Let's actually break down the costs now. So the costs, we want to talk about some myths when you see on the billboard, no cost refinance. We also want to talk about what are the actual costs. And then we want to talk about break evens. So let's talk about the first and foremost, the costs involved to refinance.
So the cost involved refinance is going to include any lender fees, any title fees, and then it's not really a cost, but it is part of what happens when you do the mortgage, prepaids and escrows.
Yep.
So let's talk there. Lender fees are any fees that are going to be charged to you by the lender. For us at UMortgage, we have very low lender fees. I believe we're $9.95 for a processing fee. That's it.
Yep.
The only other thing you would have is if you choose to pay discount points. What are discount points? Discount points are a way to bring yourself into a lower interest rate bucket. I like to present it as you're basically prepaying interest that you would have had to pay to be at that rate ahead of time. So it's a way that you're actually prepaying interest. So you have to think about it as you're not really avoiding interest. You're just prepaying interest to your break-even point to make that happen. And we'll talk about that break-even point moving forward. Title fees are exactly what you think of. You've got your title commitment. You've got your prelim. You've got your closing protection letter, any fees for closing, and your lenders and owners policies that you have to pay there. Prepaids, you're going to have to, depending on when you actually close, we're going to look at what your insurance looks like. And if you have a full year owing, which happens a lot, you're going to repay that full year owing. And then you're going to usually on average pay somewhere between 3 to 4 months upfront of your taxes and insurance to put in your savings account that you use. It's not money you don't get to recoup. That's why I said it's not really a cost.
Yeah.
It's setting yourself up for a future payment. And that way we have the ability to pay those bills when they come due through the servicer. A lot of times I'll talk to people, and if they really want a better break-even point and they don't want that cost to be there, a lot of companies will hit your rate to waive escrows. We have a lot of our investors that don't do that. Yeah. So you get the same rate waiving escrows. And if you're an astute client, and I can show you how you can take those funds you would be doing for your prepays and your escrows and put them into a really good high yield savings account, which is exactly what your servicer is going to do.
Yeah.
You're going to be ahead of the game because you're going to be paying yourself money as opposed to having somebody else just holding your money for you.
And it's great. You just got to realize, though, if you're waiving this, at the end of the year, you're going to bill in the mail from the taxes, and you have to pay that.
You have to pay that in full.
Same with some of your insurance companies as well in full, right, or month to month on the side.
So when somebody's going to waive their escrows, I always like to say, let's overfund that at least for the first year. So let's say your taxes are $400 a month and your insurance is $125.
Yeah.
So you got $525. I say, let's look at that like $700 a month. Let's put $700 a month in that high yield savings account. That way, you know, if there's any changes through that year that are going
covered,
you're covered. You're overfunding so that you don't have a shortage when that comes due.
Awesome. And then I think the last fees we have is just it depending if there's an appraisal or appraisal waiver or not.
Correct.
A credit report, and then just a few other, maybe flood insurance, maybe there's going to be a written verification of employment things. But, you know, those fees are kind of the finalized fees that are involved. And depending on what state you are, some states have the, you know, the attorney fees.
Yep.
Some states that don't have that don't have to have that as well.
Well, here's the thing that I want everybody to understand. When you get a loan estimate up front, the key word in that document is estimate.
Yes.
So it's important that you get a couple of different loan estimates to make sure somebody is not what I like to call fudging their numbers so that their loan estimate looks much lower than anybody else's. Whenever I have work done at my house, I always get estimates. I never, ever, ever take the lowest one because I realize that there's going to be only two ways that guy's going to make money. He's either going to cut corners or he's going to come to me with a change order. Same thing happens in loans. The guy who is the cheapest is normally the one who didn't do something right originally. I'm not saying it's intentional. Maybe he doesn't have enough experience. Like, I'm sure you do the same as I do. Every loan I get, I reach out to my title company. I go, please get me a fee sheet.
Yep.
I'm not deciding that the system with its algorithmic ways is going to give me the correct fees. I want a fee sheet from the actual title company I'm going to use, so those are correct.
Yes.
You want to be able to ask those kind of questions when you're asking for a loan estimate.
Yeah. I think that's huge. I think the number one way that loan officers will manipulate a loan estimate is your prepaids, which is your escrow, your tax insurance. So let's say you're in June.
Yep.
You're not collecting 2 months.
No, you're not.
How many months do you think you're on?
So in Idaho, we have our taxes are due the 26th of June and the 26th of December. So if you're getting it in June, you're probably only going to need 2 months. But if you're going to get it in July, you just paid your taxes. So I'm going to need 2 months there and 6 months reserve. So I'm going to need 8 months to make that work.
And if you have $400 a month, that's 400 times eight.
Correct.
So that chunk of change that you're going to need to collect at closing, one loan officer is just going to put two in there to make it look good. And they're like, oh, my cash close is better than his. But just so you know, when you're refinancing, the prepaids, the title fees varies, right? Some title fees are a little more expensive than others, right, on companies. But anything else of what's called box A, which is the lender fees, they're the exact same. Like, I don't have different escrows than another lender. This just is what it is. You're going to collect what you're going to collect and what the county wants you to collect. And so that's where a lot of people will mess that up. That's a big red flag. Another red flag, like you said, too, is just underestimating like what your actual taxes are. I've seen it where they clearly are paying $400 a month. I've looked at it in the county records, but then I get a loan estimate. It says, oh, taxes $150 a month. I'm like, no, 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 no. Your taxes are $400 a month.
So you as a consumer, you want to go and ask your loan officer, hey, can you send me over your tax estimate sheet so I can look at that? Because you can verify whether they are up and up or if they're not.
Yeah.
By just asking a couple of really good questions. Another one I see a lot is one day of interest. Unless yes. you're closing the last day of the month, you are not going to have one day of interest. So it's important to ask when your loan officer is estimating your closing date, because that will give you the determination of how many days of interest you're going to have to pay.
Yeah, that's a big one.
That's a big one, because lots of times now you're like $70 to $90 a day
yeah.
in interest. It can add up in a big hurry.
Yeah, so I mean, and that's another thing, you can be strategic about it, but educating them as well. Yeah. So we break down kind of the costs. Let's go to the most important part, I think, is the break-even analysis breaking point. So yeah. when a good loan officer's, again, if you're calling someone online, they're not going to go over this at all. They're going to give you the lowest rate possible. They're probably going to charge you 2 points. You're probably going to, they're just going to say, hey, we're just going to roll in the loan amount because you can do that depending yeah. on the equity you have. And they're just going to get you closed. But like a real mortgage advisor, someone who actually cares, is going to talk about the break-even point. So let's go over an example of how that works and what you do to get that break-even point for them.
So let's say your payment is $3,500 a month. Mm-hmm. And when you get the quote for the refinance, it takes it to $3,300 a month. It's $200. What you're going to want to do is you're going to want to take that $200, divide it into the total cost of that refinance, and that'll give you your break-even point. So if you see in box A that there's $12,000 in points, real quick, that's not a great break-even.
No.
Because $200 into $12,000.
I don't want to save $700 a month or
exactly.
something.
Exactly.
And that's where a lot of people, great red flag to see is that, oh, I'm saving $200, but I'm spending... Let's see, at the end of the day, if it's 12,000 and just points, overall refinance could be 20 grand.
Yes.
So it's like you're spending 20 grand to save 200. Do the math. 20 grand divided by 200. Where are we getting our break even?
It's 100 months.
So that means that after 100 months of making payments, then you're saving
money.
And guess the average American lives in their home?
About 7 years, 5 to 7.
So it's a toss up. So that's where I love, you got to look at the break even. A good loan officer is going to show you what the break even point is. And they're going to look and see what's best for you. Also, another thing I loved about how you look at their entire blended rate scenario at the same time. So you're going to look at the break-even point. You're going to look at the blended rate. You're going to look at what's best for them, for their comfort level as well. So it's like, maybe they need to take cash out because you're seeing some credit cards
yep.
that are, because credit cards, you can't catch up. One thing too as well, and then we're going to wrap up here shortly, I wanted to talk about of how sneaky HELOCs have been killing people lately. Because at the first, it sounded nice with that interest only.
So,
but now a lot of people,
let's say you went to your local credit union and they had an awesome HELOC that went to 90% loan to value. And then all of a sudden your rate that's at 6.875, you're like, oh, I can get a 5.75. Well, not if you're at 90% loan to value, because you're going to end up being higher than you need to be once you roll costs in. So it's important to understand what the loan to value tolerances are on refinances as well. And that interest-only payment, so the way a HELOC works is most of them, this is a generalization, some are a little different than this, but most of them have what's called a 10-year draw period, which means for 10 years you can access the funds up and down like a credit card on that HELOC. If you do not have it paid in full at year 10, it goes from interest-only to a 20-year fully amortizing fixed-rate mortgage. So I have seen people who had, like say a $400 or $500 HELOC payment.
Yep.
Went to $1,600 to $1,700 when it went to a 20-year on a fixed rate.
Overnight.
Overnight.
Well, I'm seeing people with a $300,000 balance, interest only, and they can't catch up.
Correct.
They can't pay it down because you're not paying off principal.
You're just trying to pay down. You got a $1,600 interest only payment.
Yeah, you're just trying to pay off the loan.
Right.
So now you're fighting interest. You're fighting for your life. And so that's another thing that people need to, you know, I think that with credit cards, we're at the all-time high right now
yep.
in credit card debt.
Over $2 trillion in credit yeah. card debt.
And then I think we're at all-time high in using our equity as well. We have the most equity, which is great. I think equity is going to bail a lot of people out at the end of the day. But that said, that's another thing that people just don't take into account is the HELOCs.
I know this is kind of a little off topic, but it's something that's been happening a lot lately. Student loans are becoming a huge issue.
Yes.
There was a lot, the SAFE Act created a forbearance or a deferment for almost all student loans in the entire country. The way I know this is my wife had student loans. We tried to make payments. They would not take them. So the one good thing about the SAFE Act was that it stopped the accrual of interest. That is now over. There's been a lot of student loans where people don't even know that they're behind on their payments. They have 90-day lates, and they're accruing interest every single month at a very, very fast clip. So if you do have student loans, it's a great idea. There's also a student loan refinance program, which is very similar to the divorce refinance program. If all you're refinancing is student loans, you can get the rate of a cash-out refinance.
Ooh, another Easter egg.
And you can go all the way up to the same higher LTV levels as you could with that divorce. So up to 96.5 on...
That's cool.
Yeah, so...
For FHA.
For FHA, and then 97 on a conventional.
And what that means is 3% equity left over.
Correct.
And then the other one
but
is...
I've had people a lot tell me, oh, I don't want to pay off my student loans because they're in deferment. You're still accruing interest.
Yeah.
So you need to look at what's happening to that balance of that student loan. And I personally feel like it's a bad wealth building strategy to not pay off those student loans.
I think it's a good strategy to look at and attack them. I think you should.
100%.
I absolutely agree. We got 2 minutes left, so let's dive into the most, you know, popular topic. Where do you think rates are heading in the next 5 to 6 months? We got two projected rate Fed cuts. Obviously, that doesn't specifically affect mortgages. I think it does. I think when loan officers say it doesn't, that's a lie. It absolutely does. It's just not immediate. It's more of a long-term thing, I think. But where do you think rates will be for mortgages in the next 6 months?
As you know, this is kind of my geeky thing that I like to talk about. Today has been a really interesting day. Today that we're recording this is October 1, 2025. Today, the government shut down.
Yep.
We are seeing a movement downwards in the 10-year treasury, which right now, even though it's just a corollary, it's not what drives mortgage interest rates. It's very connected right now. So I'm seeing rates today come down. I think that there's a couple things that I've heard from some of the Fed governors that will make some differences. Michelle Bowman just talked about the fact that they're thinking about, instead of reinvesting the treasuries that are rolling off that are 10 years and 7-year treasuries, instead of reinvesting those back in 10 years and sevens, they're going to reinvest those in the 30s.
Oh my.
So that will help on the long end of the curve, which means that will help mortgage rates because that will help long end yields come down. So I think that we're probably, my prediction, if I'm going to be bold, will be we're going to be somewhere between 5 and 5.5 mid-2026 with less than a point in discount to do that.
That's where everyone hops off the fence.
That's exactly right.
Serious. 2026, buckle up if that prediction is correct.
So here's the other piece. We have been in an inventory rising environment for a long time. But as you know, when we do our Monday market update, the last couple of weeks, we have seen inventory declining.
Yeah.
What that tells me is builders have enough inventory out there now that they're slowing down their build cycle.
Mm.
So if we see interest rates declining and inventory declining, there's only one thing that can happen to home prices, and that's they're going up.
So home prices up, rates going down.
Which creates multiple offers.
Yeah.
Which creates more people in the marketplace, which creates eating up of inventory. And it takes about 14 to 16 months for a new build to go from permitting to completion.
Interesting.
So if they are slowing down on builds now, and we start eating up inventory, we're not going to catch up in a big hurry.
That is a great ball drop to end the episode on the updates of rates. Jeff, thanks for being on this.
I just love being
here.
You
have to do 5 or 6 of these.
Absolutely.
Amazing.